You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Brian.
And I'm William.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything tabletop RPGs.
And today we're talking about the crashing and burning of everyone's favorite game of Dungeons & Dragons. And today we're joined by two guests, Daniel Gonzalez from Diversity Saves and Matthew from Abyssal Brew. One, two, three, four.
Welcome, adventurers, to the Dungeon Cast.
Hey, guys. How are you guys doing?
Hey, thanks for having
us. It has been a week.
Absolutely.
It's been a week.
It's been two.
It's been a week. I'm sure that there are at least some listeners out there that don't know what we're talking about. I'm impressed that they don't know what we're talking about because I feel like this has been everywhere.
Yeah.
But for those of you who don't know, there is a huge debacle. Crisis. I would say crisis. I feel like this is a crisis.
It's a debacle and a crisis.
Yeah. With the game of Dungeons & Dragons, most importantly with the owning companies of Hasbro and Wizards of the Coast, who are trying to change the open gaming license.
So that should be our first topic. Is what is an OGL? What is an open gaming license? I think we should get everybody up to speed and on the same page, right?
I feel like Daniel or Matt, I think you guys probably do a better job explaining what the OGL is than me, but I'll do it if you guys want.
Yeah, I mean, I know Matthew and I both publish under the OGL and have for a while now. Matthew with the Abyssal Brews, me both on the Star Seeker's Guide to Drakenstar. We initially had intentions of publishing it under the OGL.
Yeah.
Still kind of looking that out, but as well as my own adventure writing. The OGL, in layman's terms, is essentially permission from Wizards of the Coast to publish third-party material using their rules as well as some of the actual text from the core books in the form of what's called the SRD, the System Reference Document. So it includes cast classes, some races and monsters, and some magic items as well. And so all of that is kind of wrapped up in the OGL of saying, like, here, you're allowed to use this to publish anything you want as long as it's not infringing on our actual IP of, like, you know, Drist and Forgotten Realms and stuff like that.
Right. And it's the document that's made, like, all the third-party stuff that you've seen for D&D possible. Mm-hmm. It's what's made Pathfinder possible. It's what's made a lot of video games possible. And it has been, I think they established it in 2001. Is that right?
2000 or 2001.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it was designed with the intention of being perpetual and lasting forever, if I'm not mistaken. And
the language in it, yeah, it suggests that it, you know, would continue in perpetuity. But now there's a lot of debate about the revocability of it and so right. on. And that's where we're getting.
That's kind of where we're at. So I think it was January 4th where it was leaked, this new OGL 1.1. And this new OGL is disastrous, to say the least. It's disastrous for pretty much any type of content creator in the D&D space. I have a bullet point list here of some of the stuff it did. So the number one, it was their move to try and update / deauthorize their open gaming license, which was originally intended for that to not even be possible. The thing that hit me the most, the thing that like made me balk and left me shocked was the fact that they had language in it that iterated that they could use, sell, and do basically whatever they want with any of the content made under the OGL. They could essentially just steal your work. I couldn't believe it when I read it.
Yeah, license back language is common in some things like software, or, you know, certain online marketplaces where if you're, you know, creating this, it's then uploaded to their servers, and then to protect themselves in the future, they say things like that. But it's something that, you know, for 22 years now, creators in the scene have never even considered. The things that we write, the things that we make and produce, those are our property. Exactly. They're our intellectual property. We own it. We are the stewards and arbiters of it. So to many creators like us, handing that information or handing that ownership and stewardship over to a company like Wizards of the Coast is untenable to start with. That was a rough one.
Yeah, that one had me
it's infuriating.
In breakdown mode. Yeah. Like, especially, like, you know, Brian, myself, and Daniel here, we're working on a book for a campaign that we just finished that, you know, it has an audience and whatnot, and it's something we've been working on for years. And the idea of, like, oh, when we're done with it, it's not entirely ours anymore, like, that broke my heart, like, to even consider.
The line in that particular section that got me the most was sublicensable, which is something that Matthew said it's common in software, but I've never seen it on, like, a creative publication like this before. And the idea of somebody taking something that we create and then possibly handing it to another third party agency was just unconscionable.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's absolutely foul. I'm very mad.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm trying to use civil language here.
I'm not. If anybody has seen anything I've posted or talked about, like, it's just like this hits a deep part of me that, like, I'm very angry at the world about in general, not just here. I deal with this in lots of places, and now it's happening here in a hobby space that I thought was going to be a safe place to do creative work. And now you're infringing on my creativity, and that makes me very, very upset.
To add to this, Wizards of the Coast wanted everyone who signed this to register with them. We had to we would have to report on all the content we were making, how much we were making off the content, et cetera, et cetera. Another thing, this is probably the second worst thing, or maybe even the worst thing on this, was the fact that they reserved the right to change and update the new OGL whenever and however they saw fit, only needing to give a 30-day notice. This basically, like, you forfeit everything. If they can do that, you forfeit everything by signing this OGL.
The really important part of that is the content windows and production windows that we deal with in the tabletop RPG space. So when you're talking about updates to maybe something like a software license, saying, okay, we can change that in 30 days. Well, typically you don't have the same kind of prod times that you do in the tabletop space. We're talking about Kickstarters that take 2 years to fulfill and get into people's hands. The writing for a lot of projects starts a year and a half to 2 years before you even see a Kickstarter page go live. So if I'm to start writing a product today, that means that there would be the potential, if they say, you know, 30 days, there would be the potential for them to change it 24 times by the time that I got to a Kickstarter page. That's impossible for a creator that has that. And, you know, furthermore, if one of those changes invalidates the product that I've already sold on a Kickstarter but haven't fulfilled yet, but maybe the books have been printed, do I have to pulp those? What do I do?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, very close to the situation that we found ourselves in when this first leaked for Dragonstars. We're mid-writing this book. Like, we've finished a good chunk of mechanical design and lore writing, which beta is coming soon. But it was one of those things where we had to sit and go, like, shit, do we have to completely course correct on this? Do we have to trash everything we've done and start over? Like, how do we fix this?
Yeah, we navigate forward.
Especially because we already have people's money. Like, it's not like we can just be like, oh, sorry, we're going to, like, cancel and start again.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. That is not the plan moving forward here.
No, the book's happening, and we've figured out some contingencies.
Yeah, we're going to make it work. You know, and we're going to be open with our community about what it means for that product and everything. It's, you know, it's not something we're trying to skirt by or anything like that.
There was another thing in the OGL 1.1 was the statement of all businesses earning $750K or more had to pay 25% royalty to WotC. Like, not only is that egregious for its own reasons, but when you take into account the fact that they could change the terms of the OGL at any point they want after you sign this, like, who's to say that those numbers, the 750K doesn't lower to 100K and the 25% right. doesn't up to 35, 45, 50%. They yeah. can do whatever you want after you sign this thing.
These are rookie numbers.
Yeah.
An even numbers. Grosser point of it was that, I mean, not to, you know, start with a pun, but this was off of gross revenue.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the margins for this type of content are slim.
It is anywhere from 8 to 15%, depending on the type of product that you're creating. Man. So when you're talking about, you know, oh, yeah, well, it's 750K or more, but if you're taking 25% off of 750K or more, that eliminates your margin mm-hmm. on a lot of those products.
Yeah.
Some could just make it, but then it also incentivizes people to just shut down the Kickstarter once you get to 749,000. Right? Right.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I saw Why people like formulating how to like, oh, well, maybe if I only set up a certain amount of backers or start closing tiers at certain levels, that way they never broke that 750 because I saw someone did the math on Twitter of like at what point over 750 you're just no longer making money. And it was like, I think 1.1 million, which once you break 750, like, you know,
that's not that much further along.
The train's rolling. Like,
yeah, right.
You know, it's not going to take much to get to that point.
I will tell you, that's a weirdly prescient thing to say, because I was trying to think of Kickstarters that fell in that range between 750 and 1.1, and I can't really think of many.
Yeah.
Most of them, right. once they hit that threshold, they'll end up over 1.5, somewhere in the 2, you know, depending on if it's Helianas or not, right? But
right. Another thing is virtual tabletops. They essentially are trying to just shut that down. So Roll20, Foundry, Shard, Fantasy Grounds, they would no longer be able to operate as they currently do under the new OGL. Basically,
hope you liked them while you had them.
I know, right? Basically, like, it's essentially Wizards just wants to completely dominate and monopolize that space.
Right. The microtransaction thing. This is like the core of that, I feel like.
Yeah, that's they have their eyes on that for sure. Mm-hmm. I was also hearing and reading that there was language claiming that even live play content was going to have limitations, such as not being able to have any D&D content behind paywalls, such as Patreon. Basically, if you made D&D video content, especially live play content, it would have to be public, freely available to the public. Otherwise, you were in violation of the new OGL. Now, am I incorrect in that statement? Because that's what I was reading a lot of places.
I don't think you're incorrect. I think that it was so ambiguous, it was hard to tell. Mm-hmm. The language was so poorly written because they were very much trying to shove certain things off of the OGL and put them firmly in the fan content policy. And anything that would be in fan content policy has to be freely available to everyone. So that's where the poor wordsmithing of their legal document here really kind of put a lot of, you know, actual play types in a weird corner there. Yeah. With questions like that, can, you know, am I allowed to have a character intro locked behind a Patreon because that's what we do to, you know, fund this entire endeavor? Some people, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, I know it affects what we do on the show. We have big plans for like actual play, live play stuff.
Yeah, we're coming up playing them. Yeah,
that's meant to be behind the paywall for at least a while we work on it.
And we also have multiple live plays that are behind that paywall.
Many actual plays do that. They have, you know, a week early access for patrons or something like that.
Right.
That's always been fine, but the language was so ambiguous, it was hard to tell.
So that was in the original leak for the 1.1 OGL. And after that, that's kind of started the open D&D movement. And then the next thing that happened was there was an actual leak from a confirmed, I think it was a D&D Beyond employee that leaked the email.
Working with them.
Yeah, it was like a contractor working with D&D Beyond
Okay. And their email kind of highlighted Hasbro's plan to kind of remain silent until the outrage died out, and that the only metric that they can or will respond to was D&D Beyond subscriptions, which began the D&D Begone movement on Twitter, which we partook in as well.
I saw less of that than the open D&D stuff, but yeah, that was just from a personal standpoint. I did see D&D Begone. That was kind of funny.
That a lot of that kicked off, actually. Like, you know, we saw that message. D&D Shorts was the first one to cover that.
Mm-hmm.
And then shortly after that, Ginny D, you know, the person who was the face of one D&D's Beyond launched.
That was a big deal, especially for me. I was like, oh, shit, okay. We don't have an excuse anymore.
People,
so if Ginny happens to hear this, thank you.
Right.
That was pivotal.
I think everybody kind of looked at that and went, oh, shit. Yeah. Okay.
Definitely.
It definitely was like, that was the avalanche point. It was like, okay, this isn't stopping.
Yeah, and I think that once the community really took hold of that sort of thing, it was out of anybody's hands, right? You know, once people can see high profile influencers of you know, a stature like Ginny, then I think a lot of people understand the severity of the situation, which is interesting, as she's, you know, this, like, she's a creator of, you know, YouTube and covers a lot of you know, topics related to D&D, but like, her coming out in support of third-party content really, I think, turned the community into understanding how bad this would be.
Yeah, I think so too.
For sure.
Yeah. And then we started getting announcements of different content creators trying to come up with their own OGLs. And there was a few cool announcements. I know there's the Black Flag Project, which is that still going on with Kobold Press, or have they moved to the Paizo thing?
Yeah, so the Paizo thing is just a license. The Black Flag Project is a new system being worked on by Kobold Press.
Okay, and I'm to understand that it may or may not be a 5e clone, question mark? Is that something I'm even allowed to say?
I don't know for sure, but from what from everything that I've read, at least it sounds like they're going to try to make it close to 5e. I don't know if it's going to be a clone, but it's going to at least be easy to transition.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's legal walls you'll run into there, but
yeah. But the biggest news was Paizo's announcement of an OGL of their own in cooperation with a number of large third-party content creation companies. The new ORC or ORC will be free to use for anyone and everyone. And even though Paizo says that they're going to dish out the cash to develop the new gaming license, they will hand off ownership to a nonprofit legal organization with the intent of it remaining free forever. Now, this was, for me, one of the biggest, I guess you could call it, wins.
Yeah,
for
this
the
is
community.
A hurrah this for is, like yeah. the community. I saw people like celebrating this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great to see, because there had been a vacuum that I think some people were waiting on from Paizo. They're the ones that when this first kicked off, everybody kind of looked at them and said, you know, what are you doing? And I think they were really waiting for Wizards to show their hand. But after the mass unsub campaign that was this past Thursday, it seemed like they had decided they had waited plenty long enough.
Yeah.
God, Thursday was a wild day.
It was.
Oh,
it was,
man.
A stressful day.
One of the things they said in their statement that I think really resonated with a lot of independent and third-party creators is not only are they making the open role-playing game creative license, the ORC, but they also stated that they're willing to stand against Hasbro legally. Like,
yeah,
if it comes
yes,
to litigation,
they did. Yeah.
They're putting their foot down and saying that you can't revoke the OGL 1.0. And you can't come for us for this. The fact that they're working with a legal team to draft this license, who's going to then take stewardship of it, I think it's just a huge slap in the face to Wizards that they fucking earned. So,
It was comforting to see somebody standing up to Wizards as well and Hasbro. You know, we were talking behind the scenes a lot about, like, dude, we can't legal up against Hasbro. Yeah. No one can legal up against Hasbro. Somebody fucking was like, no, we can, though, and we're gonna. I'm like, thank you. God, thank you so much. Like, fuck, that was nice to see.
I've been saying it for weeks. I'm not going to be the one to fuck around and find out. I can't afford that lawsuit.
Right now, Wizards is the one fucking around and finding out. Get wrecked, fools. Like, this thing that happened on Thursday, are we talking about that in the future here, or can we talk about it now?
Talk about it now, man. Go for it.
The unsub campaign, brilliant. Yeah, I'm really proud of the community for going out and doing that. Thank you guys. We campaigned for that. You know, it was some debate. I was hesitant. It's like, maybe we should wait for the language to come out and be official, you know? But then after seeing a few extra things that, like, you know, that Wizards of the Coast employee posted on Reddit, I'm pretty sure was where it was.
That's where
I was like, fuck no. And then Ginny doing her thing, like, okay, like, there's no more, like, all my reservations
lifted. No reason to
wait
anymore.
I was like, okay, we're unsubbing now. We're going to be public about it. Like, this is something we need to do. And anybody that went and followed in those footsteps, like, really appreciate it. So Wizards site crashed because of the outpouring.
Yeah, there was 500 server errors pretty much all day off and on. I mean, people were still able to unsub, but they were running into errors and having to, like, redo it over and over again, which... That was hilarious.
It was great, yeah. But it was also a tactical ploy by Wizards and Hasbro, because when the site was back up, the unsub button became hidden in ways.
It moved, right? Yeah.
Yes. So that's a ploy to, redirect the call to action from content creators. Well, if they go there and they can't figure out how to unsub, they'll forget. And then they won't bother to do it. And that was the fucking thing. I was so
they fucked
furious.
With the wrong community,
I think
dude.
They
fucked with the wrong community.
Just how fucking wily gamers are.
I'll fucking call to action as many times as it takes. Like, if that's your tactic, I'm gonna fight you on that for sure. Because that's bullshit. Stopping. I hate. Mm-hmm. Ooh, okay.
They took on a
Brian Big Matt.
About that.
They decided to take on a community of rules lawyers, right?
Yeah. And the meme game, I've never seen the D&D meme game so strong.
Oh, it was
good.
It was good. It was good. I think one of my favorites after, you know, we'll talk about it later, but one of my favorites was the Black Knight from Monty Python, you know, his arms and legs cut off, and he's like, all right, we'll call it a draw.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
Are we talking about the language in their
update?
Their update statement?
We're about
we're
to.
Okay,
that's the next thing.
Sorry,
I
jumped ahead.
No, you're good.
It's all good. So there was a couple things that happened between the D&D Beyond update and what we were just talking about, but I'm just going to jump forward to yesterday. D&D Beyond finally responds with an update on the OGL. And they attempt to backtrack a few of the items in 1.1, but more so try to claim the 1.1 OGL was designed for moral reasons, i.e. like to fight NFTs and racism, bigotry and abusing their IP, et cetera, et cetera. It was just blatant lies.
Daniel, do you want to take this?
Yeah. Real quick, one publishing note. We are recording this Saturday the 14th. The situation is still developing.
Yep.
It is the weekend, though, so hopefully things stay calm. We are going to rush publish this episode. Pacific Coast, Pacific Standard Time, midnight on Monday.
Yeah. And Monday's a holiday, so I don't think anything's going to change between now and
then.
I don't think so.
So one additional note that they tried to add in there, they tried to call 1.1 a draft.
Oh my god, signing contracts. Yeah, whatever. You
they
have effective
sign,
dates written
you don't
in there.
Sign
yeah.
contracts on a fucking draft.
Yeah, they tried to claim that they were going to wait for the community's opinion. Bullshit.
If you wanted a draft and you wanted to get opinions from the community on it, you post it publicly. You don't go privately behind the scenes offering sweetheart deals with contracts that say consult your legal counsel before you like.
Yeah,
absolutely. The fuck not. Like this was just like,
You know, another thing we didn't cover about the 1.1 was the horrifying tone of the whole document.
It
was supposed to be a legal document, and it was condescending and juvenile even.
Yeah. Here's Blaming,
the
big problem.
The line
with,
in there about like our lawyers are gamers too. I was like, get out of here.
The line in there about them even saying like having your brother do your chores for you was a violation of the OGL. It's just like, oh my god! Anyway,
come to my like nephew's house and knock on his door.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, and the real issue I had with that, outside of just the condescending nature of it, I mean, obviously we're all adults. We know better on a lot of these things. But when you are using layman language in what is supposed to be a legal document, that can be construed as legal counsel, and nobody can offer legal counsel to me except my legal counsel.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So where's the line there? I don't think that that's appropriate, and I don't think that it is even. I don't know. It's such a weird line, right?
It was highly inappropriate. It was extremely unprofessional. It was shocking. It was almost enough for me to be like, this can't be real. Like, this can't be the actual thing that they sent.
Yeah, you're writing with emotion in this. Yeah, like, this is a legal dick. Like, you fucking serious?
And people thought I was the one who was going
to
pop off.
Ever seen Brian this mad?
It's not the vibe I try to bring to the show, but like I feel very strongly in this way about stuff like this. Like you really taking us for granted over here, you know?
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
We brought like people in this community brought it to this point, and this is how you're treating us?
Yeah.
Like
In both the 1.1 and the 2.0 FAQ that they put out, they put all of this shit onto NFTs and racism and bigotry and all this shit.
Oh my
which
God.
Which is bullshit for a number of reasons. One, Hasbro makes NFTs and
they
sells
love
them.
NFTs.
Yeah, yeah, they just put out a Power
Google
Ranger.
Power Rangers NFT.
Yeah.
And
$200 per. Yeah. Boom.
Wow. No, they are a pro NFT corporation.
That, and then there's that whole bullshit with the Hadozi that they just, you know, released.
Oh, right.
After not
or the Vistani or species.
The Vistani.
Or races and
Well, also, my understanding, too, is that with the current OGL, with OGL 1.0, they have the ability to revoke licenses of people who are doing content that is racist and
yeah.
bigotry.
Yeah,
they can do that already. They don't.
It's a DMCA.
Need to
That's all they need to do.
Exactly.
It's a DMCA.
They
can
need to update the OGL to do that.
Anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's another lie.
Yeah. So it was just an excuse.
Yeah.
And same thing with abusing the IP. Like literally the entire point of the OGL is to say you can't use our IP. Like you can use everything else, but you can't use our IP.
Yeah.
So them saying that the 1.1 is to protect that by some like further means is just it's just more bullshit.
It's hilarious too because it's so unnecessary. You can use everything that isn't our IP. No shit.
Yeah.
We can already use everything that isn't your IP because if it isn't your IP, it's public. You can't copyright mechanics. You can sometimes talk about like expressions of mechanics, but
absolutely.
That was a tangent.
so the D&D Beyond update from yesterday, it made it clear that they are still 100% not budging on the idea of revoking the original OGL and coming up with a new one, which is already just it's just bad news. It's just that is not something I'm willing to accept. Because there's nothing wrong with the original OGL. Any changes you make to it are only going to be negative.
Yeah.
I don't think they didn't walk back royalties, did they? In this
update.
They did. Okay. So
they
walked back royalties.
They removed the royalty structure, but that they're still going to have like specialized deals for people who become very successful.
Man, they want that fucking dollar,
that
and they're going to find a way to get it.
Which, it's fucking pennies. Like, it's drops in the bucket compared to what they're making.
Right. Exactly.
Last year,
Wizards alone
made $1 billion. All of the largest Kickstarters combined made, what was it, 20 million?
That's
something like
that's
that.
That's a drop
yeah.
in the bucket. Yeah.
It's less than a percent. It's like, what, 1% maybe?
I think, Heliana's was probably the most successful Kickstarter of last year, and that was like 2.2, like, right?
It broke 2 million. You're right.
Wow.
But even so, it's just such a drop in the bucket comparative to the actual money. Mm-hmm. The idea of going after, you know, companies for this, and we're talking about companies that are not harming your bottom line. In fact, in many cases, they're helping. Heliana's is the one that I talk about a lot because it was something that I saw more of this from than any other Kickstarter, but it kind of functioned a lot like Monster Hunter in the game, like in a game sense. You get you go hunt these big monsters and you get parts of them and can craft things from it. And I saw fans of Monster Hunter saying, "Oh man, this is really cool. I'm going to play D&D because of this."
Right, right.
That's how the third party market has always worked.
Yep.
Right?
Absolutely.
You need the damn core books to play the fucking game.
Right. That's an education point. We have to all be on the same page and learn the system.
So the update not only didn't really make any truly substantial promises about like how they're going to not fuck the community, but the biggest thing for me is whatever OGL they come out with, the number one thing I'm going to be looking for is them mentioning that they're going to be able to change and update their new OGL at any time they please. Because if that's in there, and it will be, I guarantee you it will be, it also means that anything that you're signing up for on the OGL means nothing. They can and will change it.
It'll just be a slow walk.
It'll be, exactly. That's exactly what it'll be. So that's the number one thing I'm going to be keeping an eye out for when they do eventually publish their new OGL. And then much like the 1.1 OGL that got leaked, this update was fucking snarky too, with their stupid line about like, people are going to say that you guys won and we lost, but the truth is you won and we won too. It's like, shut the fuck up.
Here.
Shut the fuck up.
I couldn't
up.
Believe reading that, like reading that document top to bottom was I know it's the year is fresh, but it's the worst thing that I've fucking seen in 2023 so far, like in terms of like in this space, like oh god it was cringeworthy in every aspect.
I was you know, dealing with it, I was coping with the bullshit until I got to one line that said, "In this way, we rolled a nat one." And I remember sitting right here in this office, I read that and went, "Oh, fuck off." Like, I said it audibly.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, "What?" I'm like, well,
I mean, that you sure fucking did, though.
Yeah.
But then, like, you don't win in nat one situations.
No, you don't.
I think my favorite interpretation of that, it was just a snarky little reply, but I liked it, which was, oh, so basically what you're saying is this is exactly what you were trying to do, you just failed miserably at it.
Yeah, exactly.
We rolled a nat one.
They also didn't deny the leaks. Like,
that was weird.
In a big way, they just like validated all of our concerns by being like, yeah, so anyways, about these leaked drafts, yeah, that was us.
Yeah, basically, our bad. We did try to do that. Like, you sure fucking did, and I noticed. Yeah. Thank you.
That was weird.
Yeah, I expected a lot more denial, if I'm going
to
be honest.
I really did expect them to at least... I expected them to dodge. I expected them to just mention the leaks, not talk about it. So
I didn't expect them to take the attack of opportunity, but they did.
Do we know who wrote that specific statement?
No, we don't.
We don't, right?
We don't.
No, somebody at a mixture of Hasbro and Wizards of the Coast.
Exactly. So it sounds like Hasbro whipped up some bullet points, sent it down to Wizards. Wizards assigned it to a writer or a team of writers, and those writers went through the bullet points and addressed them and didn't want to write the fucking document. That's what it felt like. Like,
yeah,
they had to try and include some of this like quippy language to like reach out to the community. This is the part that bothers me the most, is they're attacking our the emotions of the fan base in a way that like is hollow and disheartening to see. Like, using that type of language is trying to get people, like, if you didn't know what was going on with the OGL and you read that document,
you'd be like, oh, okay, shrug shoulders.
Yeah, this looks like a Wizards, this looks like a D&D, like, oh, we did a whoopsie. You guys get whoopsies.
We all do whoopsies.
We all did a whoopsie. Yeah. We're going to not do this.
No, you're right.
Yeah, we're not
going
to do
right.
this whoopsie, okay? And I was like, well, like, seeing everything that's happened in the last couple weeks and then reading that, this just offends me farther. Like, and I almost don't want to hold it against whoever wrote the document, because I know those directions are coming from upstairs. So.
I have heard rumors, and I mean, I don't have any substantial evidence, but I hear that there is, what's the word? Discord within Wizards of the Coast itself. And I would imagine there's probably a lot of workers there that are not pleased about what's going on. And for all you know, obviously it leaked. Someone in there leaked it.
I mean, heads are rolling over there right now.
I think it's really important to say in no uncertain terms that we're not endorsing bullying Wizards of the Coast.
No, definitely
not.
Definitely
like,
not.
Like, it's people are working there. They have day jobs. Like, they have to fucking work to pay bills, you know?
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say here.
It's a situation to be in. And
they're
sucks.
Not making these decisions either.
And
for all
lot
you know,
people,
they're fighting these decisions from the inside.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. A lot of these people are creators like us, except that they, you know, work in an official capacity for that. And so, you know, they keep their heads down, they write stuff, they make things, they illustrate, they do all that. But there is this layer of, you know, corporate management that Linda Cadega has been the illustrator, or not illustrator, journalist that has been covering a lot of this in some of the best extent. They are employed by Gizmodo, I believe. Mm-hmm. But their articles have been covering a lot of, you know, the internal functions at Wizards of the Coast. And from very early on, their reporting has stated that, you know, there's this divide between management and, sadly, a lot of the people that work there, where management has this weird disdain for a lot of the community in it. And
I mean, even that first email leak from that started the whole D&D Be Gone thing.
Yeah.
It's clear that there's just such a disconnect between executive decision and the actual passionate people who are making the game.
I mean, it's sad to say, but I mean, that's the common mentality with corporations. They don't give a fuck about the fandom even the product. Like, in their opinion, we're just a bunch of suckers that give them their money. Yeah. They don't understand the heart behind this community or almost any fandom out there.
I would go even farther to say that this is my experience in corporate America is bullshit like this nonstop. 24/7.
Yep.
That I as a member of the workforce am a pawn and a piece of trash depending on like what day of the week it is.
Yep.
And it's been
my experience as well when it comes to working in various industries throughout my life.
Right. And trying to break from that and be a part of this like great community. And that's like entrenches me in being a creative person and allows me to explore like all these things that are locked out from my normal life. It is just so, so nasty to me to have to deal with this here. Like, great. And I really, this isn't directed at Wizards of the Coast employees. This is always coming from the top. This is always like my problem with people that manage.
Yeah.
It's like,
when all this started to go down, like it hit me emotionally in a way that, I don't think I've ever been hit before, because, you know, it's one thing to see the negative events and the terrible abuse and corruption that happens in the world on a daily basis. But like, this is where I live. Like, this is my career. Yeah. This is my passion. This is my hobby. And you're taking a massive fucking shit all over it.
Your personal gain.
Yeah, for your personal gain. It broke my heart.
Yeah, there's more to life than money. And D&D as a community, I feel we embody that a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
All right, guys. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's just so wild, too, because like most D&D campaigns, we're fighting against tyrants and oligarchs and
tyrants.
In control.
Yeah.
And WotC's like, oh, we can do that.
Yeah, seriously. Jesus. Way to become the BBEG of all of our campaigns, WotC and Hasbro. Let's take a break, guys. I want to take a short rest, and we'll come back, and I have some big, big talking points that I think
Let's preview what those are real quick for people. So it's, you know, stay tuned. We're going to talk about where this leaves the community. Where does it leave D&D, and where does it leave us?
Yeah.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast. Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know the monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. We've returned.
Indeed we have.
We're fucking back.
Indeed we are.
Yeah. That won't change.
No, that won't change. That'll never change.
We'll come back.
So Matthew and Daniel, why don't you guys tell our audience a little bit about who you guys are, what your company's doing, where you can be found?
Do it, Daniel.
Me first. God dang it. I've been on here a few times. So for those of you who don't know me or are joining in for the first time, my name is Daniel Gonzalez. I'm a freelance designer, writer, and editor in the tabletop role-playing game space. Most of the work that I've done up until now has been, but that's changing for obvious reasons. And aside from that, I am also the co-founder and president of Diversity Saves. Diversity Saves is a nonprofit organization focused on tabletop role-playing games and specifically on uplifting and creating opportunities for people from the LGBTQIA+ and BIPOC communities to create in the TTRPG space. As an organization, have been keeping an eye on this whole OGL situation. It does not change our mission. It does not change where we're coming from. We're still committed to providing grants to people from marginalized communities to help them grow and create new products. And we are actually going to be opening our application process at the beginning of next month. So we've got a lot of very big plans for that and for future fundraising events. We successfully raised over $2,000 just in the month of December last year.
Yay.
And thank you to actually the Dungeon Cast community. We've had a couple of big, big donations. I don't want to name people here for the sake of their own privacy, but seriously, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for the people who did donate. I did see your messages. We will be in contact. It was amazing, and we're just going to keep moving forward with it.
Yeah, we're big supporters of what you guys are doing over there. So thank you guys so much for like being that force in the community, and you deserve what the success you've seen, and I hope for more.
I guess I have to follow that up, man. Mine's not as exciting and more greedy and capitalistic. No.
Hey, full disclosure, we have to live. Is also on the board for Diversity Saves.
Yeah. There we go.
Yeah. Look, I can do my capitalistic part because I do my charity part, you know, on Diversity Saves, right?
We all live in the system, yeah. So,
you know. Right. So I'm Matthew. I am one half of the creative duo behind the company Abyssal Brews. We make third-party content for Dungeons & Dragons. Who could have thought? But the things that we make are mostly focused on magic items, but we also create subclasses, creatures, add-on systems, things of that nature. Just stuff to make your game better. And more interesting, more cinematic. We create mostly on Patreon. That's where you can find all of our stuff at patreon.com/abyssalbrews.
Man, this OGL came for you, didn't it? This OGL came for
you.
Yes,
it did. Came for me specifically.
Sorry.
But you can also find us on all of our social medias at Abyssal Brews and our website, abyssalbrews.com. So we're all over the place. Cool. Just look for us. We make. Yeah,
we'll put
stuff.
The links in the description really as well. Pretty.
Yeah, we hear great things.
So. Yeah, seriously.
Oh, also diversitysaves.org. I forgot to actually name the site.
Don't worry, the links will be in the description for both these guys.
So. So please check out Abyssal Brews and Diversity Saves. They make
amazing please items. Do.
Yeah, you got these are both great things that exist in the community.
And now more than ever, like third party creators need your support.
Absolutely.
We don't consider you obstacles to our money.
We exist to enrich your experience at the table. That's part of this.
Sorry, for those who don't know, that was some language that was included in one of the leaks was management considers customers an obstacle to their money.
There's a really you guys know Monkey DM. He did a really good recap video on everything that hit the major points, and he included that specific language in one of his videos on TikTok.
There have been so many third party creators and independent creators who just come out in stride.
Yes,
in support of open D&D. It's been amazing.
Yeah, that actually leads me into the first bullet point that I want us to talk about of, obviously this situation, it's not over. It's going to continue developing. Yeah. But as of now, where does this leave the D&D community?
As one who scrolls, I will tell you that Wizards and Hasbro, with this OGL, you have weaponized one of your greatest assets in free advertising and turned them against you.
Yeah.
The community is not on your side in the world of Scroll. So, they have been making really funny, quippy stuff that just completely rejects the BS that you threw our way.
And, the Min community is coming for you.
Absolutely. These content creators are all affected, and you have weaponized them against you, and it's going to dilute your fan base in a way that I don't think you foresaw.
I think that one positive note, though, that we can take from this on where this leaves the community is that this has united a community that is known for never agreeing on anything.
That's true.
The D&D community, everybody plays D&D differently. Some people play a high fantasy, cinematic, crazy over-the-top game. Some people play with gritty realism and kind of in these grimdark settings and things of that nature. And everywhere in between, people mod it to play, steampunk. People mod it to play modern or futuristic settings. But everybody has their own opinions, and we all read and quibble over these little rule intricacies and does this mean this and this and so on. But this is something that has taken a community that is known as a bunch of folks that argue over minutia and somehow took all of them and said, here, you're all friends now, and there's the BBEG. I think it's a good place to be, though, for a community when we can fully understand that though there might be differences in how a lot of tables play and differences of opinions on, the little stuff, that we as a community do care about the others in the community, that we care about uplifting other creators. The reason that Fernando and I even started AB was because we saw so many other creators doing really amazing things, and we thought we had a voice to add to that. And we were so excited to see people use our stuff at their table. That kind of joy that you get from creating something and other people loving it. It's been really impressive to see a community rally around that feeling, the communal sharing of all of this. So I think for the D&D community, angry, united, sure. But also finally, feeling like they are in a place where they have some sort of, influence over the greedy corporation at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. A common solid ground to stand on.
Yeah.
That's also been a weird
for the first time in the 20 something years that I've been playing D&D, it is easier than ever to convince your friends to try that weird little indie game that you've had sitting on your shelf for 10 years begging people to play. So Like, if there are non-D&D games out there that you want to try, like, now's probably the best time to convince some people, given everything that's happened.
Yeah, especially, like, the one-page RPGs. Like,
there's so many good ones.
Yeah, like, we played Sexy Battle Wizards together, and that was great.
Yeah, absolutely.
So thank you, Monico.
You know, another thing, too, is I know I've heard from some of these people, and I understand the sentiment. There's people who don't want to leave D&D behind, even though they agree and they stand against WotC. And guess what? You know, WotC and Hasbro, they don't own your table. They don't own what you do at your table. You know, D&D doesn't, like, it belongs to them in a legal sense, but D&D is older than them. And D&D doesn't really belong to them. D&D is what happens at your table. So you go ahead, you keep playing D&D, and you can do that without supporting WotC. You don't have to buy any of their new modules. You don't have to advertise them, and you don't have to give them any of your money.
I would say a little piece of, you know, maybe advice is every time you feel like you have run out of, you know, some material, research a new third-party publisher. Because
there's
a ton, and I mean, maybe that's self-serving because I am one, but I fully acknowledge that. But I think that there are so many people creating so many really interesting things that are far more in-depth, diverse, and intriguing than the core materials, that you can probably find something that not only works for your table, but might even work better for your table.
It's true. We've turned to third-party materials for our home games. We've used Kobold Press stuff.
We're making third-party material now.
Yeah, we homebrew a lot. Like, I know the community loves to homebrew, right? Like, that's a big thing. You just do it yourself, man. Once you get kind of a general understanding, whether or not you did something balanced or not is a different story. But, you know, it's up to you. Like, that's the beauty of this game. And one of the pit holes I've found is, like, that kind of de-unifies us, right? It's like all this extra stuff, like we're doing this, and it's hard to, like, come to common ground on things sometimes, and that's where the arguing over minutia can come from, aside from rules and stuff. But it's like, oh, well, we're doing something completely different. No two tables are the same.
No, they're not.
But the spirit of the game, like, that...
I think that is the same.
It's the thing that keeps me here. Like, this is, like, the lore is awesome. It's a lot of fun. Will and I were talking about it before this recording, but, like, the thing, the camaraderie of having your table and having that group to experience that together, I mean, I think is the reason why memes were hard for so long for the D&D community, because it's like, you know, the ranger blah, 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 and the wizard blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, well, like, it's different from...
In my game,
it's so different from table to table. So we're hitting these weird tropey, stereotypey things about the game over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And
well, it's the Gygax quote, right? The secret that we should never let game masters know is that they don't need the rules.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
It's what happens at your table. It's the things that happen with your friends, and it's that getting together and talking about it and figuring out what you're going to do. So
friendship,
I think that...
was the treasure we wanted all along.
Goddamn right it was.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you know, you make fun of that, Daniel, but, like, we have forged real friendships out of that.
Yeah.
Right? You know?
I tease, but also, like, absolutely. I wouldn't have the friends I have today if it wasn't for you, if it wasn't for the tabletop community as a whole.
Yeah.
Both in terms of, like, the people I've met in my day-to-day life, as well as the people that I've worked with to come to call friends, such as the three people on this call with me, like, you know, William, Brian, Matthew, all three of us, you know, all three of you, I have long since considered friends. And if it wasn't for D&D, I never would have met any. So, obviously, there's value there. There's true intrinsic value there.
It's true. I wouldn't be doing this podcast without getting to know Will as a friend.
Yeah.
And him having this passion.
I mean, like, hey, you want to play some D&D? And me basically asking him every day. And he said yes.
We're going to combine, our passions together in a non-sexual way.
And we don't judge.
Well, we would. I mean, like, we could have done that, but we did. We just didn't.
It was a choice we didn't make.
Yeah,
but we could have.
That's totally okay if people do. Like, I'm not trying to say that. What I'm trying to say
is
that
some people combine that as well in their D&D. I'm just saying
it's true. And there, it can be done. It can be done very tastefully. But the way this podcast came together was Will's got the D&D and I had like a audio software and some training.
And the funnies. He also had the funnies.
I got some funnies, I guess. Some people would say I have some funnies.
You brought the giggles.
Yeah. I do bring giggles. I try to anyway. But like the idea is that like, dude, we started playing D&D and it was so much fun.
Yeah,
like,
that's essentially what happened.
This would be
happened.
A great centerpiece for my creative work. Mm-hmm. Like, excellent.
I feel like that's how all of us got in, you know?
Yeah.
We saw it as a platform. And I think that the community in general now is maybe reconsidering how they look at the current people who are creating parts of the platform, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. The vibe that I've seen from a lot of the people that I know is they feel that there's been a breach of trust.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah.
We always had those moments like the Wizards has done stupid shit over the years. They release the Hodozi in Spelljammer and everyone goes, are you serious? Like, what the fuck are you doing? And they eventually, you know, say, oh, okay, our bad. We were dumb. Okay. You know, and they fix it and everyone goes, can you just stop being racist? And they're like, we'll see.
Maybe.
But, you know, everybody was kind of like, all right, well, that happened. Let's get back to playing D&D. But this was one of those times that it has made the D&D community not just question the ability of Wizards to create, you know, decent content, but it's made them question them as stewards of the entirety of the brand and game that's around it.
Without a
doubt. And so that's a hard place for a community to be, right? Mm-hmm. It's scary for a lot of people that have put a lot of time and effort and, you know, sweat into these games and companies, but that's where we are.
I feel for everybody out there that went through this past couple weeks. Like, it was tumultuous emotionally for lots of, I had a lot of people reaching out to me on Instagram about like, dude, what's going to happen? What are you guys doing? Like, this has been really shitty. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, dude, it sure has. I'm really sorry that you're going through this. Like, we're in this together. Like, I didn't respond to every single person, but like we're in this together. Like, it's going to be okay. Like, I think my comment on where does this leave the community is that, well, we're hurt. There's been a breach of trust, but now I think a lot of us are going to be willing to try new things in the tabletop RPG space. This is really going to open up the rest of the space in terms of gaming to us. Like Daniel was saying, we're going to try that weird niche thing, gathering dust on the bookshelf. This is the time.
Yeah, this might very well be the dawn of a new renaissance in tabletop RPG. As a matter of fact, I think it will be.
Yeah, and I don't think 5e is going anywhere necessarily in terms of like how, you know, I'm not going to shame anybody
it's
for
still
playing.
Gonna have a player base.
Yeah, I'm not going to shame anybody for playing 5th edition. Like, no. I played D&D like yesterday.
Exactly. You know? Like, I fucking love D&D. That's not going to change. I just hate WotC. Fuck Wizards.
Pretty much.
Not the class, the company.
And not the employees specifically.
No, but also the class.
Yeah.
The executive decisions.
So a lot of our audience has been asking us, what does this mean for the Dungeon Cast? And me and Brian have had long conversations. I think the number one thing is it means that the Dungeon Cast is no longer going to be a podcast about everything D&D. It's now going to be a podcast about everything tabletop RPG. Are we going to stop covering D&D entirely? As of right now, we agreed that the answer to that is no, we're not going to stop entirely. But what we are going to do is we are going to focus more on the deep lore, the lore that goes all the way back 50 years before WotC or Hasbro ever had their hands on it. And we're going to include lore that, let's say we're talking about a subject that has lore in multiple games. Well, guess what? Those games have a place now on this show, and we're going to cover what the lore is in those games as well. We're also probably not going to promote any new books or any new content coming out. We're probably going to stay away from a lot of the mechanics. We are not interested in giving WotC more money.
Promoting their stuff. Like, they crossed the line with me I'm just not down anymore. Yeah. Like, for that specific stuff. Like, we did our Dragonlance cover, and it's like got a bad taste in my mouth now.
Yeah.
It's like Dragonlance is really cool, and I like the lore and stuff, but like we did it because there was hype around a book release. Yeah,
and we did a lot of promoting for that book by covering the topic. That's not going to happen anymore. Another thing, too, is not every episode is going to be D&D related, period, end of story. We're going to learn how to play Pathfinder, second edition first.
Yeah, we're going to cover Powered by the Apocalypse stuff. I've talked about it on the show before. I really love Powered by the Apocalypse and the possibilities with that system. It's a great game. Yeah. It's like a great little mechanical thing. You can just slap a bunch of stuff together on it. It's really a lot of fun every time I played it.
Yeah. So yeah, that's basically what it means for the Dungeon Cast. As for a lot of our live play stuff, me and Brian talked, and we're probably for the time being, we're gonna switch systems. We're not gonna play 5e. We're probably gonna try some other things out.
Yeah. But check out FBATS though, because that's a 5e game that we recorded from starting in like 2017 that's airing right now.
Oh yeah.
It's like, well, I did it already and I'm really proud of it. Sorry that it's 5e, I guess.
Podcast.
It's a good show.
Yeah, it's a show. Like part of what I do on the on this podcast is like I like making shows.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of this for me.
Yeah,
it's like, dude, I'm making a show. Like it happens to be a D&D show. Well, now it's a TTRPG show. I just like making shows. It's fun.
Yeah.
And D&D was a vessel for that. It doesn't have to be like we were talking about this laser focus that D&D gives you for like reaching people in the community. Well, that's kind of spread out now. Like. In my opinion.
Yeah.
And maybe this is where we should have been before, but like this is my introduction to the gaming space is Dungeons & Dragons 5e, which I think is a great place to get people on board with role-playing games, but I don't know anymore what that looks like.
Yeah. What about you guys? What does this change for you guys moving forward, if anything?
I think, you know, in the short term, it means we're going to be diversifying our content offerings quite a bit. One of the first things that I did today was run out to my friendly local game store and buy the core books for Pathfinder. I did that this morning. Nice. And
I have plans to do the same.
Yeah, same here.
Speaking of, that's something else that I want to just toss in a little thing here. Make sure you guys are supporting your friendly local game stores, because a lot of them might get hit by sales of books that are no longer going to be going out if you aren't, you know, a lot of them buy their stuff in advance. It's not like, you know,
they didn't know all this was about to happen.
Right. So, you know, if you are normally a patron of a friendly local game store, and you're no longer buying D&D materials from Wizards of the Coast, consider popping in there and, you know, maybe checking out some other books that they have, some other games that they have. I just wanted to make that little note because I care a lot about my friendly local game store. So,
yeah.
But for us, it means diversification. There are a lot of things that I've been wanting to write for a long time, and sometimes the daily, weekly churn of what we produce has meant that I have lost some motivation to do these other projects. But I will tell you, there's a fire under my ass right now, and I am like so ready to write so much. So one thing that I'm starting to work on is a Morkborg hack that I'm excited about. And the other thing is diversifying our offerings of magic items, creatures, so on and so forth. I'm going to finish learning. I have knowledge. I have approximate knowledge of Pathfinder, but I'm going to finish learning Pathfinder and start offering our content on both pathways of 5e and Pathfinder so that we can have some diversification there if Wizards becomes even more idiotic in the future.
Yeah.
It's a pathway, you know, new path to find. But that's pretty much what it means for us. It's just diversification, learning, and maybe writing some stuff that I had backburned because I allowed myself to get a little too comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, I think that applies to us too.
Yeah, I think it's going to be something that echoes throughout the community. Is you know, we've said it, time to try new games, diversify your table, and as content creators, I think this OGL specifically hurts them. Like it's less about like my table that I play outside of content creation, right? Like we can do whatever we want and we don't have to give Wizards our money if we don't want to. We can play Pathfinder if we feel like it that day. We can play The Quiet Year is a great game I love to play. We could play that, you know, like there's lots of cool tabletop. We could fucking play Catan, you know, like,
yeah,
we can do whatever we want. But here in the creator space, you know, it means a lot to, you know, it's kind of a statement piece to keep doing 5e stuff. You know, it's not that I just don't feel good about it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's been our audience, right? The 5e yeah. folks have been the core of Abyssal Brew's support. And I, you know, I will tell you, to the community's credit, we have seen an amazing amount of people just, you know, saying like, are you guys okay? Are you going to be okay? Where are you going? Are you okay? What can we do to help? And I keep telling them the same thing, you know, which is just make sure that you're still supporting your third parties. That's helpful, obviously. But outside of that, just like patience for us while we're doing all the big scary stuff of learning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's true.
But
yeah,
it's exciting.
New things.
It is. But there's so much good stuff out there, and so much of it is created and sought over by companies that care far more about gaming than the executives at Wizards of the Coast.
Yeah.
And I think something to keep in mind, we use the word company a lot, and it's, they are companies, but at the same time, like, a lot of these third-party publishers or these smaller games that aren't the Wizards of the Coast, aren't Paizo, the company is like 2-3 people.
Right.
So,
right,
like, right. Really, you're supporting somebody's livelihood directly by supporting these people. You know, it's like some of the biggest creators in our space, it's like a 1-2 person company, and it's a passion project. It's something that they love the game. They want to, you know, provide it to the community. So getting that response of even like a 0.1% of what Wizards is making on their game could make a world of difference to people, change their lives. So 100%. You know, it makes a big difference to support your.
That was actually just to cover like a real small point from the royalty discussion earlier. Sure, they kind of, you know, wiggled around on that a little bit, but that was one of the things that was kind of bothersome to me when they said, you know, oh, this only impacts like 20 people. That's far from the truth, because anybody that's making 750,000 or more on a project, those projects are typically large, and they involve a whole system of freelancers that are in our community. These people are illustrators, they're writers, they're layout people. They are marketing people, and they only work on freelance contracts. They're not these companies that, you know, make these larger projects. They're not able to support people 24/7 on their normal jobs because the margins just don't work in the TTRPG space for that. So there's this whole network of freelance folks that are part of those mid-tier creators, and you would see them lose work over this. So when they say, oh, it only impacts like 20 people, well, actually it's impacting a network of hundreds, if not thousands, of freelancers. But sure, minimize away, bro.
Right.
As a freelance designer, can confirm. It's absolutely true. It's I have, you know, between Drakenstar, which I'm, you know, part of the team of, as well as a couple of other projects that I've been working on, you know, while we're still full steam ahead, we're still working on things, you know, there was a lot of uncertainty for the past 2 weeks of like, you know, how are we going to make this work? And with other projects I've had just one like delayed or put on pause, it's scary. Fortunately, I have a day job, you know, I can afford to lose a contract. It's not going to hurt me the way it's going to hurt people who do this full time. Like for them, this is, you know, everything. So it's,
Yeah,
that was one of my biggest things. Like that was what made me the most sad about seeing all this. It's like, dude, people, this is their career. Like, what are you doing? Yeah. You know, you're unhinging people's lives.
That was one of the, I said this to Fernando, which is my partner in Abyssal Brews, but one of the most hurtful things about the tonality that Wizards has used in their communication of both the V1.1 and this, you know, D&D Beyond update, is they treat or seem to think of creators who are typically people who have, you know, worked in businesses and so on. And they treat them as if we're kids with a summer job.
Right.
And we're not. This is part of our livelihoods. I'm not taking the money from Abyssal Brews and, you know, buying a Benz with it. I'm taking the extra, you know, couple bucks that I make from this, and I'm using that to, you know, pay on my car payments or buy some freaking groceries because inflation is ridiculous right now.
Oh my God. Yeah.
That's what we're doing with this. Yep. We're not, none of us are out here like, oh yeah, man, we're just sipping on, you know, champagne and like vibing in the VIP room. No, like
exactly. Like Will and I, we reinvested a lot of the money we made into the show this year, like a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I took a lot of personal money, and a lot of that comes from my profits from the show. And I reinvested that into the show because I love doing this and it evokes emotions in people. And I see the response from our audience and they, how much they enjoy it and how many thank yous we get. And that, that puts a fire in me to like, yes, like I'm reaching people and they like what I'm doing. And I want to perpetuate that in a way that is like, this is what the, this is the positivity of doing this. This is what, this is the driver for it. Like the money is awesome. It lets me get high-end equipment so I can make something even better. So I can give myself the space to have more time to make something even cooler. And Super Quest Saga was born of that. And like the work that we're doing in our studio space, this looks like, it's starting to look like a real studio to me, man. Like this is awesome. It's my dream is coming true. And it's because we're able to do these things in the, and it's because of the community. And that's what would really make, like other things I do with my money from the show, take my kid to like Disneyland for her birthday or something like that, because I live in SoCal and now I have a couple extra bucks and change and I can do something like that for her. Mm-hmm. You know, my day job pays my bills and like the money from the show allows me to do like stuff I should be able to do with my day job, but I can't, you know, like the show opened up a lot of things for me and like made, helps me live a, like a life that I think a lot of people think take for granted and see as normal.
Yeah.
Like I'm able to do some of this stuff because of, like go on a road trip or something to go see, like go to a wedding of a friend, like, you know, upstate or something like that, stuff I wouldn't have been able to do. It's because of the show I can do that and the support that we get from the community. Yeah. I'm not out buying shit for myself. You guys, like I want to do something creative with my life and like make this something that I do.
It is really fun. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say is and I'm full time with the show. This is how I feed myself and my kids. This is how I pay my rent. Like I got nothing else. I mean, I'll go back to work if I have to, but I quit my day job and took the pay cut because this is what I wanted to dedicate my life to, because this is what makes me happy.
There's a running joke in the TTRPG creator space that I have said and many of my friends have as well, is that we're all trading the same $20.
That's funny.
Because like I mean it's absolutely true, right? I we get, you know, Patreon money or something like that, and like one of my friends Cassie Mothwin is releasing like a wizarding school game coming up soon, Tangled Blessings, that is not produced by a TERF, and it will be much better, but like, you know, I want to support her stuff. I will use that money from, you know, Abyssal Brews to go and support other creators in the space. A lot of that, you know, it, we trade that same $20 around.
Yeah,
reinvesting in ourselves and in other people in the community is such a huge part of what makes the creator community so unique and so special to so many of us. And that's all to say that without, you know, both our fellow creators and especially, you know, fans of shows like this who sign up for Patreon, who watch all over the shows and do positive reviews and all this stuff, like it all, every single one of them matters. You know,
it so. Truly,
yeah, that's really makes a difference as well. It support doesn't mean monetary, like dropping a good review, saying you liked something that we made, you know, just clicking a like button somewhere, like every bit of that stuff,
it matters
a ton. It does. But yeah, I don't know. Where does this leave us? I guess it leaves me a little less certain of the path that I'm going to follow in the creator space, but I will say in some ways that makes me happy because I was comfortable and now I'm not. And when I'm uncomfortable, I'm more creative.
Yeah. So you get to make weird shit.
Yeah, now we're going to start making so weird shit.
I'm entering my art house days.
To get weird.
Wizards? We're going to get real weird with it.
Yeah, I've been holding back. You're about to see what dragons can really do.
There was somebody.
With that, I think we can get ready for our long rest. Is there any last comments anyone wants to make before we say goodbye?
Fuck you, Hasbro.
There we go. I like that one. That's nice, a good one.
Dude. I just want to say thank you to the community. You know, like without all of everybody in the TTRPG community, you know, the pushback would have never happened. Wizards would have never listened. And while they're still just going to take a few months to hope everything dies down and try to pull this shit again, you know, I think the community is ready for it. So thank you for having our backs. You know, it means everything.
I just want to say thanks to you guys for having me on and giving me an outlet for this. It's been a very hard week. I told Daniel, I can remember the last time I openly cried, which was February 21st of 2021, early in the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And that same day I started Abyssal Brews. I contacted Fernando, and then the second time was Thursday. It's been an emotional one. So thank you to everybody for the support. Thanks for giving me something to come on here and have an outlet with. And,
of course, man. Thank you both of you guys for coming on.
Yeah, and like we said, you can see those notes in the below. Go and support your third parties, you know, and thank you for your continued support of this show. I hope this isn't going to we're ready for it. You know, like you've D&D 5e, fans that are hardcore, we want you to stick around on this journey with us. But if you gotta go, you gotta go. You know,
they're gonna talk about cool shit. Trust you. Want to learn?
Yeah, yeah. I do think that we have a lot to offer. Like, still, you know, this doesn't really change.
Yeah,
the spirit of the game, the heart of the show. Like,
D&D lore is still gonna be here. It's just gonna share space with a lot of other stuff too, and it's all gonna be really fucking cool.
And if you really love 5e and you want to keep playing that, that's totally cool. Listen to this stuff and then take it and put it back in your game. Because there's a lot of great ideas out there that you can steal from.
Yep, totally. Absolutely. We've got 5 years of 5e content in the bank. Go listen to that stuff. That too. You know, what you really want to do. But yeah, that's that. I think we'll call it a game.
All right, let's call it a game. Talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Thank you.
Dungeon Cast. Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods, and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.